Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations. Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
I will show the world what the ultimate bioweapon looks like when I let loose Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the Twig crew upon Chris Redfield and his unnervingly hot little sister. Oh. Oh, yes. Right here on this weekendgeek.net.
Hey, guys, what's going on? You are listening to the Nerd News Network. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd. Today is, well, technically it is Monday, September 12th, 2016, though it's pretty close to midnight, all things considered, but I am here entertaining you with, well, kind of a weird news magazine edition of the Nerd News Network. Actually, kind of light on news, but heavy on...
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Content. You might be saying to yourself, Mr. Birdman, well, what the hell does that mean? Well, have I got something for you. I actually have an extended interview today with Dan Wallace. He is the author behind Ghostbusters, the Ultimate Visual History. I'm also going to give you two reviews in this episode. I'm going to be talking about an entry coming to us from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. I'm going to be talking about The Conjuring 2, reviewing that Blu-ray in depth. And I'm also going to be giving you my thoughts on the last bit of Fallout DLC that is Nuka World, just because I've got some thoughts. I've been wanting to get them out for a little while, and I don't think it deserves a full rad per se. So this week, I guess I should kind of catch you guys up on what has been going on with me personally. Well, as you guys may or may not know, on my Facebook and Twitter about a month ago, I announced I was going to make some serious changes because I am looking into getting the weight loss surgery, the bariatric bypass or whatever the hell it is, gastric bypass, whatever. And that means I have to lose some weight before they'll do surgery on me. Well, I've been on my diet for about the past 3 weeks to almost a month. I think I'm finally starting to notice some changes. A big shout out to my friend Tracy, who is a personal trainer and has some kind of a nutrition background, helping me out with. And I'm using this app called MyFitnessPal, tracking everything. And I've introduced a lot more fruits and veggies into my diet, though I'm finding out certain veggies and fruit I just can't have for whatever reason, which kind of sucks, but, you know, it is what it is. So a lot less junk, or at least stuff in moderation, fall within your calorie goals, fall within certain targets for carbs, which I didn't realize were pretty much in everything. So that's been certainly a challenge and a half, but I am starting to notice some changes. Like I said, starting to get around a little bit more. So that's good. So the Birdman is getting into better health, slightly better than what I was. So I'm pleased to report that. That has been going on. Otherwise, I guess I should mention the topic show is going to be coming out this week. We didn't do one in August because we didn't have Roebuck. Roebuck is still working up at his job at the resort. So he'll be back with us this month and next month for our topic shows, which our topic show this month, because it is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. Me, Ryan, and Steve, Megatron Phillips from the Geekcast Radio Network, will be talking about that later on in the week. So that'll be exciting. I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be kind of like our extended episode of like Future Imperfect, yet not, but it'll still be a regular Twig topic show before, in the month of October, we take on the Saw franchise, and that'll be me, Ryan, and James Rolfe, though you know him better as the angry video game nerd, because he's been doing that for over a decade now, if you can believe that. Holy crap. So yeah, we're going to talk about that next month, and I think that's pretty much about all the things to cover. Like I said, there's going to be a lot of rads coming up, hopefully in the next couple weeks to the next month or two, because it's Broketober's coming up soon. So we got Titanfall 2, we have Battlefield 1, we got Call of Duty coming out, the new Pokemon will be coming out at some point. Huge shout out to Nintendo for helping me replace the 3DS that either got lost or stolen over my holidays, over the summertime there. So finally it is back and fully operational. I'm so thrilled. I'm just sad I lost my extended battery for this thing, but I don't know, maybe I'll get around to dropping another $90 and getting the extended battery, which I honestly believe is one of the nicest things I've ever owned, because it pretty much is powered by like a nuclear reactor. But anyway, I have bored you enough with my personal updates. Let's get talking about today's news. And today's news, I picked just because I find them personally interesting. I love the world of fiction. And I love it when people or franchise holders really get involved with their fiction and the lore that they've helped create. And the BBC is doing something rather cool. So there are no complete film recordings of the Doctor Who serial known as The Power of the Daleks. The master negatives were actually destroyed back in 1974 in an archive purge. And it's one of the most famous lost Doctor Who episodes. However, though, what BBC America and BBC Worldwide have announced they're going to do is they're going to do a brand new animation based upon the program's original audio recordings, any photographs that survived, and the film clips that have survived. And they're going to release it on Saturday, November 12th, which is 50 years after the arc originally aired. And then the following day, it'll be released on the BBC America app and the official site. Now, the reason this is kind of a big deal is this 6-part adventure actually features the renewal, or aka the regeneration, of the first Doctor, who was William Hartnell, and where he turns into Patrick Troughton as the second Doctor. And there also, this is where the companions, Polly and I want to say Ben, fight Daleks, and you're going to love this, on the planet Vulcan. Mind you, this would predate Star Trek by a number of years. They'd be pretty close to about the same time, actually. So who's to say? One of the people in charge of this, the guy who's going to be producing this, is Charles Norton. And he is this guy who's working with the BBC. And he's going to be working with comic book artists Martin Gregory and Adrian Salmon. And one of the coolest things that Charles says here, the Power of the Daleks animation is the most ambitious Doctor Who archive restoration ever attempted. And we're all very honored to be a part of such an exciting project. Intelligent, suspenseful, and magnificently staged, the Power of the Daleks is one of the great lost classics of 1960s television and a superb example of the black and white era at its finest. One of the other people who's involved in this is president of BBC America, and that is Sarah Barnett. And she says, 50 years after its inception, Doctor Who continues to be a global phenomenon that perplexingly reanimates itself literally right now. The Power of the Daleks is the latest uniquely creative storytelling I'm trying to read this. I'm just having a little bit of trouble here, guys. Sorry. The Power of the Daleks is the latest uniquely creative storytelling to spring from the extraordinary mythology of the Doctor Who world. There are only a handful of global franchises that have the depth to evolve in that kind of way. We are so proud to present this work to our BBCA Doctor Who fans who we think will go crazy for this reverent yet shockingly reinvented mashup. Charles and his team are remarkably talented and passionate about Doctor Who, says Paul Hembury, and he's one of the executive producers over at BBC Worldwide. And we are thrilled that fans will soon be able to enjoy this rather sinister but wonderful classic story. That's really cool that they're going back and using original audio recordings. I was actually thinking about this before I came on air. Are there anything else they could restore? Maybe get sound-alikes, kind of do them like Big Finish does for their audio dramas. So maybe there's potential here, but the fact that they're going to be using original surviving film clips, the original audio recordings, I'm really looking forward to seeing what they can put together. In fact, I'd love to see them do something with the Dalek movie that came out in like the late 60s, early 70s. It's not part of official canon, but I think it'd be kind of fun to revisit that or maybe even remake it at some point. And that kind of reminds us, not the only Doctor Who news I've seen this week. I think we're getting the new season of Doctor Who in April. And I'm pretty sure I read an article this week, and this is not a hugely unknown thing, but Christopher Eccleston, who played the Ninth Doctor, did an interview, and he says he really regrets ducking out of the franchise when he did, but he says it was necessary due to the production people above him. He just was not getting along with them for whatever reason, which is really unfortunate because the Ninth Doctor was my first, and I got into the series because of my friend James, and I remember getting into the series years later because I want to say that's when I was actually really sick with the swine flu that I picked up while I was working with Handsome Tom and the Game Heroes down in Texas back in 2009. So, but yeah, in fact, I really need to catch up on Doctor Who. I haven't seen much of the 12th Doctor's run, but I have everything recorded, so maybe it's time to break out the DVR and the Blu-rays and just kind of catch up. Next bit of news, and this is something kind of funny, because once again, talking about characters and creating their lore. So Darkwing Duck creator Tad Stones has revealed that Darkwing Duck does not happen in the same universe as DuckTales. And according to Stones, Darkwing Duck is not a spinoff of DuckTales. It's actually its own separate universe. He actually says, because Launchpad appeared in DuckTales and we used Roboduck as the Superman character, the hero gets all the glory as opposed to Darkwing. Fans try to connect the two realities. They are two different universes in my book. We work in the alternate Duckverse, says Stones. And it's actually kind of funny. The Nerdist did a video on this, like, today. I'll actually, if I remember to post it, and I will remember to grab this because I think it's relevant, they actually go back and reference the series Bible. They got a hold of this back in 1991, and the series Bible says Darkwing Duck does happen in the same universe as DuckTales, because it says, moving on from DuckTales, Launchpad McQuack will be a supporting character, but not the lead character in this new series. And there's also other things linking the realities, not just Gizmo Duck. There's a line, which you'll see in the video if you watch it down below, where Fenton Crackshell says, oh yeah, we used to work for the same guy back in Duckburg. There's also another episode in like the second season where Darkwing and Launchpad go to like this villain's resort and they're all hanging out there. There's like Ma and the Beagle Boys, Ammonia Pine, Gloomgold, Magicka Dispel, and all these people. There's even a sign at one point they pass, I think it's like episode 50 of the first season. It says, now entering Duckburg, and it's got a picture of Scrooge McDuck's face right on the billboard. So it's kind of funny when the series creator's work is used against him. I just find that particularly amusing. Because in my world, there's no reason to separate the two. There could be just reason Launchpad wanted to do more good than being a chauffeur. That's a heroic goal. That's good. That's, I mean, it would have been nice to see more people out of DuckTales, maybe crossover, maybe Gyro Gear Loose or something. You know, maybe he could have done some Q-like shit for Darkwing, but, you know, whatever. So that's what I had to cover from the world of news this week. I'm not going to cover a lot of the heavy stuff because other people have done it first and have done it better. So obviously no disrespect to Mr. Gene Wilder and whatnot, but other people have already done that, and that's a horse I'm not willing to revisit right now. So what we are going to do, though, is we're going to listen to a really cool interview I did with this guy. Like I said, his name is Dan Wallace, and he's the author behind the Ghostbusters, The Ultimate Visual History, and that comes to us from Inside Editions. So take a listen to my conversation with Dan and learn a little bit of something about the process that goes into making a book and just some cool anecdotes along the way. We'll be back, guys, right after this.
And now it's time for another special feature.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Nerd News Network. As always, it is I, the Birdman, and it's been a long time since we've actually had a guest on the show, and I'm going to be talking to somebody that is rather cool, involved in a book that I've been wanting to get my hands on for quite some time. It's getting close to that time of year. We're going to be talking with Daniel Wallace. He's the author of Ghostbusters, The Ultimate Visual History from Insight Editions, and this guy, he's written about many other things, like Star Wars. Trust me, if you're a nerd, you've probably come across his work at your local bookstore at some point or another. And without any further ado, let's welcome Daniel to the show.
Hello.
Thanks
for having me on the show. Yeah, it's good to be here.
And it has been quite the ordeal to get you on the show. Either tornadoes, power outages, or Gozer himself deciding to not make this happen.
Yeah, I think it was the latter. I think that there are some sort of supernatural forces preventing it. But yeah, it's been a couple of weeks since we have originally tried to make this happen, and now it's finally happening.
It's
knock on wood.
I know, and I'm rather excited to talk to you because I'm a huge fan of the Ghostbusters franchise. Have been since I was a child, and you've had a chance to really plumb the depths of this franchise, not just touching upon the movies, but also touching upon the comics, the video games, and even the toys, which I'm particularly interested in. So I guess let's start from the beginning. How did you get involved with this particular project?
I was super lucky to get involved with this particular project. It was, I have written, as you had said earlier, I've written a lot of books over the last 10 or more years. Star Wars, DC Comics, Marvel Comics are my main universes, but I've always been a huge Ghostbusters fan, huge. And what had happened was there was another author attached to the Ghostbusters, the original, the Ultimate Visual History, and he had to drop out because he had other commitments, and the publisher who I had worked with before was like, wow, we really need somebody on short notice. Could you do it? And I was like, well, yes, because it's Ghostbusters, of course. But the catch 22, the monkey's paw of the whole situation was that I had to do it super fast. So it was a super hectic, probably about 4 months that I had to really get into it and turn everything around. But what I think resulted was, I think it's a best book that I've ever done. I've done, you know, 2-3 dozen different books, but this is the one that it's really detailed. It's just really comprehensive. There's so much insight from the people who are involved with it. I got to talk to so many people involved in the production of the original Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, the real Ghostbusters, Extreme Ghostbusters, all of that. I interviewed probably 50, 60 different people for this. And it was just, it was such a pleasure. I mean, I can't even begin to describe it. So that's how I got involved. I was almost like a pinch hitter, but hopefully I at least got a single out of it.
So while you're putting this book together, like I said, during this incredibly short period, who were some of the people that you got a chance to actually talk face to face with, or even just over the phone with?
Well, I mean, like Ivan Reitman, for example, you know, the only people that we did not get the chance to talk to in the making of this particular book were the, like, white whales. Bill Murray, we really tried to get Bill Murray, and we couldn't get him. And Rick Moranis was the other one, who does not, neither of them really do many interviews, so we did not get them, but pretty much everybody else is in this book, with the obvious exception of Harold Ramis because he passed away. But I really try to rely on a lot of, I researched as many old interviews with Harold as I could so that his voice was in it. And hopefully that came through really well. But, I mean, really, God, we talked to the, you know, the son of the composer, who had also passed away, but his son was also involved in the making of the film. The voice actors for all the animated Ghostbusters properties, the directors and animators and writers of the Ghostbusters animated properties, a guy involved with Hasbro who does the merchandising, you know, all these stars of the films, the special effects people at Boss Films, who did the first movie, and ILM, who did the second movie, and the comics from IDW. We talked to people from there, and video games. We talked about the producer of the Ghostbusters video game, which is, you know, the one that's really good, where it has all the actors' voices in it. And it was I can't even describe how much it, falling down the rabbit hole of Ghostbusters it was, because I love the original movie and I like Ghostbusters too. And I was kind of, into the spinoff stuff, but this was really like appreciating the franchise. And the thing is, here's something that people might not know, is this book came out, it came out about a year ago, not quite a year ago. It came out last fall. And at the time we started working on it, there was no new movie. There was no reboot of Ghostbusters. It was like I was sitting there writing it, and I was like, well, geez, in the epilogue, do we talk about maybe someday they'll do a third movie or something like that? And then as we were writing and putting it together, it was like, oh, they're actually making it. Like, it happened that quickly. And so I think people have asked me, like, was this released to tie in with the new 2016 movie, and it wasn't. It was just a happy coincidence, I think.
So when you were doing all the interviews, and like I said, you've talked to pretty much the entire gamut of people, what was probably the hardest one to get a hold of, or what was the most memorable one that sticks out in your mind?
I really, actually, this is something that is the concept artists were probably the most interesting to talk to. There was a lot of concept art that was done for Ghostbusters, the original, and the second Ghostbusters, that has never been seen by anybody before. And that was the real thing. Like, you think, well, you talk to the actors and that would be the interesting part. And the actors are interesting, but they've probably been interviewed so many times that they've told so many stories that it's less likely that you're going to get new insights out of them. The concept artists, and to another degree, the special effects artists, don't get interviewed that much. They don't really appear in that many books. And so when I was working on this book and talking to concept artists, I was also like, well, do you have any artwork that we can feature in the book? And in several instances, whether it was, designer who was designing props, or whether it was somebody who was designing monsters and doing sketches of monsters and ghosts, they were like, well, yeah, I have a whole box in my garage. I have a folder in my attic. And I was like, have those things appeared in print before? And they're like, no, like, who would want to print these things? And we're like, we will. We would love to print these things. So there's a lot of artwork. If you do buy this book and you look at it, there is a ton of vintage behind-the-scenes production artwork and concept art and sketches and blueprints and so on that has never, ever, ever appeared anywhere before, because before it was literally in somebody's garage.
Now, while you were gathering research, sir, I just kind of thought of this. Has any of this unseen Ghostbusters stuff ended up in your personal collection?
I wish. I wish. No, it was we really were, because we were under so much of a time crunch on this, that my whole goal was to make sure that everybody who was involved and had stuff could immediately get into the design people, and that they, my fear was that it wouldn't be high res enough. You know, like I was talking to a guy at ILM who had done makeup tests for when Dana, you know, in the second movie, when Dan Aykroyd turns into Ray, turns into sort of the Vigo, he's like possessed by Vigo, the Carpathia, he kind of has this like makeup test. And there were a ton of interesting photos that were from that. And they sent him over and it was like, wow, these are good. These have never been seen before, but they were photos and they weren't high enough resolution to appear in a book. Like they would have looked grainy.
Aww.
And so we really had to be super careful. Like a lot of old, because most of this stuff is from the 80s. It's from, you know, 84, 83 for the first movie, or, you know, 88-ish for the second movie. And some of it was just done on, like, you know, Polaroid. And they would send us these interesting photos, and it was like, I don't know if we can reproduce that because it's going to look terrible. And what we had to do was really, really, really keep pushing. And so that was my fear. Every time that somebody would say they had some great stuff, if it wasn't original artwork that we could scan, meaning that it was a grainy photo, there was this moment of trepidation where I was like, oh, please, please, please let us be able to use it. So my whole brain was consumed with trying to ensure that we could use stuff. And I never really thought about obtaining some of these original sketches for my own benefit until it was too late. Now it's probably too late.
See, I myself would have been like, you want to give me some of the toys that never made it. If I actually did, when you were doing this, did you get a chance to check out most of the original toy lines from like Kenner? Because I saw you have some of the original scans of the original toy catalogs.
Yeah, we did. And the whole merchandise area was, you know, that could have been a whole book in itself. But we talked about the vintage toys and how they had released the original lines of the real Ghostbusters. And how that was, or, you know, originally the whole toy experience was based on the cartoon, was based on the real Ghostbusters. And then fairly recently, they started doing toys based on the original movies. And those are a little bit more keyed into adult collectors, and they're prop replicas of like the Ghost Trap and the Proton Pack and so on. And, that's kind of an interesting history of how all that kind of came together. And particularly getting into the original real Ghostbuster stuff, because there's some interesting stuff that was produced and was never made. And there were some figures that were extremely, I don't know, very strange, you know, like they would tie in with like real monsters, you know, like Dracula and the Wolfman and stuff like that. And it was just interesting in that there was, because I remember talking to a guy at Hasbro about the whole product line. At the time, action figures had to have a gimmick, you know, like if you're going to do a new season of action figures, you know, like, all right, well, it's, you know, 1989, you know, we've got to do a new season of something. And it would have to have a gimmick like, okay, well, now they all glow in the dark. Now they all have slime oozing out of stuff. Now they all, if you squeeze them, their eyes pop out. So it's all a thing. And it was just kind of interesting to see toy releases that you might remember from, you know, long ago, viewed through the lens of, like, the people who actually had to make them and like, sell them to, like, a corporate board at you know, a toy manufacturer or something. It's like a whole different way. It's like going upside down on the whole process.
It wouldn't surprise me if there's still some of those old Ghostbusters prototypes sitting in. I want to say Kenner was based out of Cincinnati, I want to say, in the 80s. Because I used to watch a show called The Toy Hunter, and this guy found all these prototypes for all these really weird toys, even had a few Ghostbusters ones. So maybe if you ever do a follow-up book on merchandise, please God, maybe we'll get a chance to actually see some of these. So I guess as my couple of final questions here for you, what was the best experience to come out of this? Like I said, you were a fan before. How has that changed now that you've had a chance to work on a book like this?
It always deepens the appreciation of it. And it's actually kind of an interesting thing because on the one hand, it kind of takes away a little bit of the magic, but it deepens the appreciation of the craft. And this is something that I've experienced with Star Wars, because I've written a ton of Star Wars books. So there have been, and I grew up with Star Wars. It was the biggest thing, you know, it was just this magical, you know, the Force and the Jedi and so on. And the more I got into it, the more I realized, well, you know, it's people have to write it and they have to work on it and they have to do that. And that was kind of my first experience with like the, okay, well, it's not like coming down from the heavens, you know, like people have to make it. So there was a little bit of a, you know, disappointment that, okay, this is just made by people. But and then the follow-up realization is, okay, that's actually kind of cool that it's made by people, because I'm a person. I can make this kind of stuff. And you realize that the people who are making this stuff are not, you know, they're not God. They're not like these amazing people. They're just people, and they have a particular talent, and they're putting them together in this way. And the same thing with Ghostbusters and with other things that I've worked on is this, you know, there is not no one person on this. They're all super talented, but no one person is like a, you know, Leonardo da Vinci sort of like, you know, thing. The magic comes because you get a lot of talented people together on the same project. And it's like a boat, you know, and everybody's rowing in the same direction. If you get everybody rowing in the same direction, then you can go really far and really fast. And that's what movies are like. And so I think that every time I do something like this, I get this realization like, oh, okay, the movie didn't come down from the heavens as, you know, a perfectly foreign bit of something. And then the initial disappointment is followed by, but it was crafted by this superbly competent team of people who were at the top of their game. And that's always the case. You know, it's really interesting to see something like a movie that's a successful movie or any creative project, really. How does it come about? And you know, how many hands touch it? And what are their stories?
So final question. During the course of this, did you ever get a chance to wear the jumpsuit and the pack?
No, I didn't. I keep meaning, I would love to do that. I was at last year when the book initially came out, I was at New York Comic Con, and we had the copies of the book there, and we were promoting it, and I was doing a signing and so on, and all the cosplay Ghostbusters chapters came around to get the book, and I was talking with them and so on, and that's what I was really hoping. I was like, oh, I'd love to just, you know, do that. I'd love to wear that stuff. And I haven't had that chance yet, but it's on my bucket list. That and, you know, like I was talking about Star Wars earlier, it's with Ghostbusters and with Star Wars, it's like there's a very universal cosplay thing. You know, you can be the Ghostbuster, which is just yourself with your name badge. And that, and then with Star Wars, it's like a stormtrooper, you know, like anybody can be a stormtrooper and anybody can be a Ghostbuster because, you know, you don't have to be you're not a person. You're not Iron Man. You're not Darth Vader. You're not even Venkman. You know, you're yourself, but you're a Ghostbuster. And that's what I always think is really cool about the whole cosplay element is it's very, welcoming. It's very universal, and that's kind of how the movies were too. It's like, you know, it's a franchise, right? It could be a franchise. You just sign up, strap on the proton pack, and you're ready to go.
Well, Daniel, I got to thank you for taking time out of your, I'm sure, absurdly busy schedule to speak with us here on This Week in Geek. What projects are you currently working on that we might be able to talk to you about in the future?
Right now, I am working on a project for Star Wars, and it's going to be called Star Wars on the Front Lines, and it'll be a hardcover book, and it's about the battles of Star Wars. So the, you know, the Battle of Yavin or the Battle of Hoth from The Empire Strikes Back, and what is the perspective of the soldiers in these? It'll have some beautiful paintings, and right now I'm in the process of figuring out how we're going to cover Rogue One in there. So to have episode 7, The Force Awakens, in it, and it will have the Rogue One. So that's the one last bit that we need to complete for this particular book. It'll be out next year, but very soon I'll be able to put the final piece in the puzzle, and we'll send it off to the printers. So keep an eye out for that.
I will definitely be wanting to talk to you about that, because I'm a huge Star Wars nut, and I come from the old West End Games background for all the Star Wars Expanded Universe stuff, which is now Legends, but that's a story for a different day. Anyway, all right, guys, that's going to do it for me and Daniel. So now back to, oddly enough, myself, right here on the Nerd News Network.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Welcome back to the Nerd News Network. Big thanks to Dan for doing that. I'm actually really looking forward to checking out his book on Star Wars when that comes out after Rogue One. So that should be a lot of fun to talk with like him again. That guy was a knowledgeum of just unusual knowledge. Although, if I'd had those kind of connections, I totally would have milked them for Ghostbusters toys. Actually, I really hope someone does a... I'm pretty sure there already is a book on Ghostbusters merch. And I want to say Dan Aykroyd helped write it, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So, if you know, feedback at thisweekingeek.net. Okay, so as promised, two short reviews, because I think these things are worth talking about. I'm going to start with the shorter one first, and that's going to be Nuka World. And that's the last piece of DLC for Bethesda's Fallout 4. That was the last piece of DLC for the Seasons Pass. You could buy it separately. It was cheaper than Far Harbor. And what it is, for those of you that don't know, Nuka World is a fictional theme park in the game that has been taken over by a couple of different raider gangs. Your character, the lone survivor, gets roped into this thing called the Gauntlet. You defeat this raider boss, and you essentially become the new leader of these raiders, and you have to decide, do you want to make peace among them? Do you want to help one faction overcome the other? Or do you want to wipe them out and free the slaves that happen to be trapped at Nuka World? It also introduces a new game mechanic where you can raid settlements in the Commonwealth. And that's weird, because you're basically attacking your own settlements, or if you haven't conquered certain settlements, you can also do it that way. Mind you, I'm in the end game for mine. I'm like level 240. So obviously I've got every single settlement. And attacking your own settlements is, you know what, I'll get to that later. So storyline-wise, it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense depending on how you approach the sole survivor sort of thing, or the lone one, or what, you know, your character. I don't know, at least the way that I roleplay mine, especially if you side with the Minutemen or the Railroad or the Brotherhood of Steel, or it seems to go very much against what you've accomplished. Although there are some dialogue changes where if you've raided settlements, Preston will get really, really, really mad at you and pretty much leave you. I mean, he'll still follow your orders as general, but he's not your friend anymore. There's also some unique dialogue if you show up in Nuka World with the Silver Shroud costume as well, so that's worth mentioning, and worth seeing, too, actually. But storyline-wise, it'll take you probably about over 10 hours to clear the Nuka World park and to see everything that's there. The missions aren't really hard, all things considered. It's kind of like a bunch of smaller DLCs all crammed into one, because each park has its own flavor. Like, there's Galactic World, which is sort of like the Epcot Center World of Tomorrow thing. There's a Safari Adventure, which is self-explanatory. There's the World of Refreshment. So think of it as like the Walt Disney World. It's a small world after all. except now there's Meyer Lurks infused with Nuka-Cola. It's weird. There's like a Kitty Kingdom, which is taken over by these ghouls and everything. And there's some other stuff hidden out in the park as well, so I'm not going to spoil everything for you. And eventually, the idea is to get the gangs, like I said, all working together or favoring one, but it seems like your decisions don't really matter. Like, I favored a group called the Operators. I gave most people their own piece of the park. Only one time did they become pissy, and that's pretty much about it. I mean, I ended up killing the leader of, I think it was the Disciples of the Pack. I can't remember which, but it doesn't really matter. It really doesn't. Now, these people will continuously generate radiant quests for you and give you gear. Eventually, I got these persuasion grenades, which is really, really lame. And other ones that'll send monsters into a settlement if you happen to be raiding settlements at that time. Now, this really disappointed me. There's one mission you can get almost as soon as you walk in where it's kill all the gang leaders, which automatically means you don't get the new companion, Gage. The new companion is kind of cool. I like his perk. Basically, you get 5% more experience, and I think you get like a buff to damage or damage resistance or something. So he is worth it in that regard, and he's pretty easy to please. He doesn't like you drinking, but you can get high all you want, and you just break in the shit, so whatever. But anyway, so if you go around the park and kill all the gang leaders and you free the slaves, it's just some experience and that's it. You get no real story. There's no real impact other than someone says, oh, you've killed the raiders. Thank you. Now we can live in peace. There's nothing. Nothing. Whereas Far Harbor had the story of Nick Valentine and tracking down this girl and all the things that happened with that. There was a fallout, if you pardon the pun with it. There was consequences to your action. Here, there's no consequences, which is kind of outside of maybe settlement raiding. And settlement raiding, so let's talk about that. So you have the option to either go into a settlement, talk them out of it, or you can full-on attack them. Now, attacking settlements is frankly goddamn stupid. Because your settlements should be so powerful, odds are they're going to repel you and your, like, 10 guys that go to attack them. Now you can outfit these people, but unless they're all... Now, my defense is I build like God. Like, I build walls, I build foundations, so I can literally build a perimeter fence, and then I mount machine guns on top of everything. So my base literally is a wall of concrete, and anything that can be filled, I usually put like a dresser there or a wall, or I'll create like a pit trap or something. So you're not getting in. I actually have a video posted to my Twitter, which is at Birdman Dodd, and it's what happens when I attack one of my own settlements. I am melted in about 10 seconds, and you can guess how well my raiders fared. I am launched into the swamp at Somerville Place or Palace or whatever the hell it is. It's not recommended. Now, overall, you might be asking, is it worth getting Nuka World? That's really hard to say because I enjoyed what I played with it, but in terms of new weapons, there wasn't anything super blown up my skirt. Yeah, there's some new power armor. There is a new really powerful weapon, but you have to jump through so many hoops to get it, which is annoying. If you already have the season's pass, yeah, you've got no reason to not get this. But if you're going into this expecting a deep story like you got with Far Harbor, I might recommend you wait until the price drops, or wait for the Game of the Year edition. In fact, that's probably what I'm going to recommend, is wait for the Game of the Year edition, which will inevitably be out in probably like a few months, if not like November or something, when, you know, all the big sales come on. And then it's worth checking out there. Now, it would have been really nice had they re-released Nuka-Cola Quantum back in the stores, with this, but as far as I know, that's just Jones Soda Berry Lemonade, I think. It's the one that's blue, either way. If you want to, it's just a different label, but still. Okay, so final review and final topic of the day. We are going to be talking about Warner Brothers Home Entertainment's The Conjuring 2. And this is the sequel directed by James Wan, produced by him as well, I'm pretty sure. And this is about Ed and Lorraine Warren, a couple of demonologists who made headlines years ago with the Amityville Horror. These people also checked out another very famously documented haunting called the Enfield Haunting, and that happened over in England. And I don't want to give too much away, but there's some very creepy audio recordings and some suggestive photographs that maybe lead people to believe it's a hoax or entirely not a hoax. In the movie, it definitely plays it down the middle. I will say the director, James Wan, he knows how to scare the shit out of you. I actually saw this with my wife and my friend Kelly, and they were terrified seeing this. And I had a pretty good jump scare at like 1.2. There's some wonderful makeup effects in this movie. There's some great atmosphere. In fact, this was the movie that actually set me down the path to finding YouTube creepypastas and just listening to people like Corpse Husband, Lazy Masquerade, and Mr. Nightmare. This is the movie that got me into people like that. And it's one of the best Halloween movies you can see, especially if you can get this in the right sound setup, the right home theater viewing experience. You'll have such a creepy time. Like, there's this demonic nun in this movie, which is scary as all hell. There's this old man you'll see. There's actually one scene where one of the girls is trapped up in a room, and the old man just melts out of the wall. Like, he comes out of this wall of shadow, and it is just, you'll drop a deuce in your pants. And I love just how visually effective this movie is. And I don't know what else the franchise can do. I hope there's another scary-ass haunting that the Warrens can do. And this is definitely a better follow-up to The Conjuring than Annabelle was, because Annabelle was disappointing and boring as crap. But The Conjuring 2, worthy follow-up. In terms of special features, they actually, one that I really, really, really liked is they have one where they actually take a haunted tour of the the Warner Brothers lot on the soundstage where they filmed this. And they actually get a couple of legit EVPs. You can't hear them as well as I would maybe like, but they also have another one talking about the score for The Conjuring as well. And you just see how much work went into that and how they built that up, which I thought was really, 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 really neat. They talk about building the sets, doing the writing for this. The only thing I think this Blu-ray is missing is a commentary. It would have been awesome if they could have got Lorraine Warren, because Ed passed away a couple of years ago, or just get the producers and the directors and get the creative team involved. This would have been such an interesting thing just to hear them talk about, like creating the visuals. They also have one on the Crooked Man, and that's all I'm going to say. That legit was like a holy shit moment in theaters, and I loved it. And it's not often that I get scared, so I completely recommend this movie. So anyway, guys, that's pretty much going to do it for me, because I'm off to the doctors for the next few days. I'm actually doing a sleep study, so I will be in and out until topic show. So hopefully you guys will be good to each other. I will catch you again real soon right here on This Week in Geek, which, by the way, please check out our Patreon for Terrible Warriors. It is patreon.com/Terrible Warriors. We are really close to getting to yet another goal, and I love doing that podcast. You guys will like what I got coming up for them real soon. So anyway, guys, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodds and live free or die hard. I'll catch you guys again next time right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show.
So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good, Geico.
Holy shit! Oh my gosh! Freak! Die! Holy crap! Whoa! Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well as subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by @replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.